Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
What is up, fight fans? We welcome you in to another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I am your host, Dan Canobio, and wow, where do we even begin this week? This is actually version 2.0 of this episode. I had a show in the, ready to go with Teofimo Lopez as my guest. I was going to break down his fight. And I'm still going to break down the other fights this weekend, but I had Teofimo Lopez ready to go to talk about his fight with George Camposos. That fight is no longer happening, as it has just been broken news that Teofimo Lopez has tested positive for COVID-19. His fight is off. They're rescheduling it for August 14th as of right now. That news sent shockwaves through the boxing world as we were, set into a little bit of a frenzy, a lot of speculation, it's not just boxers, not just this situation, a lot of with athletes. Are they getting vaccinated? Are they not getting vaccinated? I've heard a lot of different things, but the reality of the situation is that Teofimo Lopez will not be fighting this Saturday against George Camposos. He will then be now moving to August 14th. And as we know, heading into this week, Top Rank had amended his deal and was scheduling an October 2nd ESPN pay-per-view, giving him a little bit of a raise. That date has now been moved back. So many moving parts here. George Camposos put out a statement, did not wish Teofimo Lopez a speedy recovery, said he was reckless, said it was he's been in camp for 13 weeks away from his family. If anything, it's going to give him more motivation to knock out Teofimo Lopez. Those would be fighting words. Camposos has been talking a lot of trash during the lead up to this fight. But, you have to think, as boxing fans, you speculate. A fight like this, from what I've heard, was not doing that great at the gate. As we know, it is a very busy weekend, so it's got a lot of competition that night. Triller is going through some types of things behind the scenes. Yes, they lost Mike Tyson. They have lost Jake Paul. I'm not saying anything here that any speculation that Teofimo Lopez made up the fact that he has COVID. He has COVID-19. I confirm that. He is sick. He is symptomatic. So, wow. What does this mean for him going forward? What does this mean for Triller? They have said that they're going to move forward now. There's going to be a fight in August. They're still saying that Oscar De La Hoya's comeback will be sometime in September. He still doesn't have an opponent. But that is the news coming out of Teofimo Lopez camp. That fight is off. I'm sure there's going to be even more news as by the time this podcast hits your feed and by the time this podcast is over on Fubo Sports Network, Pluto Boxing Channel, wherever you take this this show in. So that is the news that we got today about Teofimo Lopez. Speedy recovery to Teofimo. I know that the Marlins have a home game August 14th in Miami, so it looks like Miami won't be the day or won't be the venue. Maybe they bring it to New York City, where Teofimo is a big draw. He's from here. He won his first title here. There are a ton of Australians here in New York. Maybe we get that in an outdoor venue, MSG. A lot of moving parts here. And, of course, I'll have you covered. And I've reached out to Teofimo, and maybe we can get him on the show to clear up all the air. So that is some of the news. But there's more news. Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury went face-to-face today after, as I record this, in Los Angeles for their only press conference in the lead up to their third fight, which is July 24th. And the story to come out of this was Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder chose not to speak. Yes, he did address the crowd and the media at the dais, didn't say a lot, promised bloodshed, promised to win, went back to his seat, put his noise canceling headphones on, and let Malik Scott, his new trainer, do the speaking, do the talking. Malik Scott got into a back and forth with Tyson Fury. Christina Poncher tried to ask Deontay Wilder some questions. He wasn't having it. He kind of sat there. It is what it is at this point. I put out a tweet that whenever Deontay Wilder speaks, people get mad. Whenever Deontay Wilder doesn't speak, people get mad. And people got upset about that tweet. But if you take a look at it, just look back. He made all the excuses. He made all the accusations. He had the crazy stuff about the costume, getting drugged, firing Breland. I disagreed with all of that. Did we really want to see that today? I'm actually relieved that this didn't come out. I'm actually relieved that this wasn't the main focus of this third fight. I thought that it could have got real ugly. I thought that the promotion could have started to delve into racial stuff. I thought it could delve into conspiracy theories. I thought it can delve into a back and forth, ugly stuff. You know, we know that they lost money on the second fight. It did not live up to expectations at the box office, didn't live up to expectations in pay-per-view buys. What is the laziest way to promote a fight? You get into race, you get into conspiracy theories, two things that are dominating outside the boxing world in this country today. So I was actually somewhat relieved not to hear the accusations, not to hear the cheating stuff. I understand that Deontay Wilder said all those things, but he said them already. It's over with. Let's focus on the fight. Yes, I understand he could have went back and forth. It could have been a time for him to face the music, sort of say. But what was he going to say? You know, Fury was going to go back and forth with him. He maybe would have got a few barbs, and he still got a few barbs in Fury on Deontay Wilder. Not only that, you take a look at how the media has been reporting the or been trying to report the facts with Deontay Wilder over the last year. I did not see one reporter bring up this arbitration ruling that it could potentially prevent the Joshua versus Fury fight. I saw a lot of reporters talking that they thought that Wilder should have took step aside money that apparently wasn't even produced, wasn't even offered to Deontay Wilder. So he probably has a beef with the media. He doesn't want to do any talking. It's the third fight of a trilogy, the third fight. How much more selling do you need to do? You're either going to buy this fight or you're not going to buy this fight at this point. I think Wilder getting up there and talking, bringing up the cheating and the acquisition and all that stuff, accusations, it would have done more harm than good. So there it is. I understand that it made some people upset. You know, there's a lot of press conference heads out there, you know, reading into it. I think Fury's going to win the third fight. I think he has his number. Take a look. They fought 20 rounds. How many of those has Tyson Fury won? Maybe 17 of them? Not to mention a few knockdowns in there. I know Wilder has a few knockdowns in there, too. So what more do you want from Deontay Wilder? What does he have to go up there and say? He said what he had to say at the beginning. I don't think this fight needs any more marination. I don't think this fight needs any more selling points. The fans are going to either buy it, they're going to support it, or they're not. I think it makes a different type of buzz. He didn't go up there and speak. That's a story. Him not speaking is saying something at Deontay Wilder. I don't agree with the cheating stuff. I honestly think that cheating stuff was a low point for boxing, and it takes a lot to find a low point in boxing. You know, sullying Mark Breland's name, bringing up crazy accusations to Deontay Wilder of cheating, you know, padding his gloves, cracking his skull. That was a low point in boxing. It was an embarrassing time. Why rehash that? Why bring that back? So we can relive it again just to drum up a couple more pay-per-view buys? Come on. Let's let this fight happen. May the best man win. And then we can hopefully go on to see a undisputed fight sometime at the end of the year or early 2021. But as for me, my pick, I'm still going with Tyson Fury. I picked Deontay Wilder to win the second fight. I did not believe that Tyson Fury would come in at 275. I did not believe that Tyson Fury would step to Deontay Wilder. He did both those things. I was shocked that night. I was wrong. I'm not afraid to say I was wrong. For this third fight, I'm going with Fury. I liked a lot what Malik Scott said. I like the fact that Fury looks like he's very focused. I'm sorry, that Wilder is very focused. He can still land that bomb. I don't think that Fury will look as good as he did in the second fight. And I don't think Wilder will look as bad as he did in the second fight. So therefore, it could produce a classic. That's what Bob Arum was pretty much insinuating, that whenever the heavyweights step into the ring, even though that second fight was one-sided, it was still exciting. I believe this third fight's going to be a classic. I think both guys have a little bit of ring rust. That could actually play into the hands of Wilder, because Fury is a guy that depends on rhythm in there. I don't know. I think it's fun times. I think it's good times for the world of boxing. I think a lot of people are reading a little too much into Deontay Wilder. They're not speaking. I saw some stuff from some reporters out there saying that it's, you know, you're out there. It's a press conference. You have to address the press. You don't have to talk to the press. He went up there and said what he had to say at the beginning and then chose not to talk to the press. They didn't ask questions up there. It was Christina Poncher asking the questions. So I don't know. We'll see now from Deontay Wilder. I'm sure he'll do some more interviews. I'm sure you'll catch him on YouTube. You know, press conferences aren't the only way to get info these days. Maybe in the 80s and 90s, I watched the Kings documentary when they went on a 14-city tour. You don't have to do that anymore. You'll hear from Wilder on all these interviews. I understand that he usually gets these softball questions and that's where he brought up a lot of the cheating stuff. But if you really want to hear Wilder speak, I'm sure you can find ways to get that. I'm pumped for that third fight. I'm pumped for Pacquiao versus Spence. I'm pumped for this weekend still, despite the fact that Teofimo's not fighting this weekend. I'm looking forward to all the fights. I'm on the other side of things. I'm going to break them all down and give you some under the radar fights for what is easily the busiest weekend of 2021. You ready to break down some fights? I'm ready to break down some fights. This is one of the busiest boxing weekends of the year. One fight card is off, Triller, with Teofimo Lopez having to withdraw because he tested positive for COVID. He actually just put out a statement on Instagram confirming it. So we're down to four cards, I believe, and there is also a fifth independent pay-per-view from Guadalajara, Mexico, featuring Anderson Silva boxing Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., 8 rounds. Chavez Sr. is boxing in an exhibition against Camacho Jr. You got Canelo's brother also fighting on that card. Marcos Villegas from the Fight Hub is scoring the bout. I was actually going to be a part of the broadcast hosting it. I had prior commitments. So order that pay-per-view if you're interested in entertainment, because I do think that it's going to be quite entertaining over there in Mexico. All right. But going down in Las Vegas over on ESPN, let's start with Naoya Inoue, who is the monster. Do you have him number one? Do you have him number two on your pound-for-pound list? I got him number two, right behind Canelo Alvarez. He fights Michael Desmarinas over on ESPN. And now, as we know about Inoue, he's the Ring Magazine WBA and IBF bantamweight champion. He's got all the accolades. He is the monster for a reason. His promoter, his Japanese promoter, has come out and said that it's not just enough for him to go in there and win. You know, he has to entertain. Yes, I'm looking at you, Shakur Stevenson, who dominated his fight but didn't go for the knockout, didn't get that buzz. Inoue's promoter in Japan wants him to knock out Desmarinas in spectacular fashion so he can continue to live up to that monster mystique. A smaller guy like him has to go out there and really make a statement. Now, in a sport that's dominated by the big guys, the heavyweight division, look at Wilder and Fury on a stage today, taking over the boxing world. These smaller weight guys, these little guys like Inoue, who has all the talent and all the skills, they got to go above and beyond and dominate. They got to go in there and take out their opponent in spectacular fashion. And I totally believe that's going to happen with Michael Desmarinas, who is the IBF mandatory Filipino fighter managed by Sean Gibbons. So you know that he's going to come and bring it. But let's be honest, the IBF mandatories that they've been trotting out there, you know, Josh Taylor's opponent before Jose Ramirez, not good. There hasn't been that many good mandatories from any of these, organizations. But it is what it is. When you have all those belts, you got to face mandatories. That's the name of the game. But Inoue is a fierce, fierce offensive fighter, a dynamo, literally can do everything inside of the ring, knockout power, jabs, defense, activity, you name it. He's got a killer instinct. Just take a look at his plus minus ranking, 14.4 plus minus ranking. That ranks fourth in all of boxing. That is hit and don't get hit. That is a true measure of an elite fighter, 14.4, which is slightly above Terrence Crawford, good for fourth all time. So currently he's climbing the ranks right now. In a way that right there is the true mark of being elite, hit and don't get hit. It's the name of the game. There's some big names ahead of him. If it in a way is climbing up that plus minus ranking, he lands 23 punches a round. Whenever you get above 20, you're averaging over 20 landed around. You're having big rounds every single round. That's an impressive, impressive number. He throws a lot of punches too, 66 a round. So 23 landed, 66 thrown for in a way. Those are both well above the averages at bantamweight. Now, I talked about how he's a complete fighter. How about this? He lands 9 jabs per round in a way. That is second in all of boxing, only behind Triple G, who I think is the best, has the best jab in all of boxing over maybe the last 10 years. So Inoue can do it in a number of different ways. He can box your ears off. He can knock you out. You know, he's got angles in there. The guy is the total package, and he's just such a great competitor in there. And I think Top Rank and ESPN really have to, take a look at his career and move him along the proper way, because I think this guy could be a huge, huge star in the U.S., but they got to keep him active. He hasn't fought since Halloween night. That's not enough. Get this guy active. Get him going. Now, another thing, too, is Inoue's fight with Donaire is now being brought back into the spotlight because of Donaire's win 2 weeks ago, picking up the WBC title. People are trying to make sense of it. They're trying to think, how did this fight age? Let's give Donaire more credit for what he did in there. Yes, Donaire fought well. He fought better than expected. And that's usually the case when you're fighting an elite fighter. Sometimes you get more credit than you deserve because you're simply doing better than people thought. We saw that with BJ Saunders against Canelo. A couple of guys gave him some rounds because he was simply doing better than many expected. That was the case with Donaire and Inoue. Yes, broken orbital bone. Donaire landed a bomb in Inoue. But take a look at the final 3 rounds. When champions are made, when the going gets tough, how do they respond? Inoue dominated over those final 3 rounds. 82-34 edge in total connects in rounds 10, 11, and 12. With a broken orbital bone, when things got tough, Naoya Inoue landed 82 punches in 9 minutes on a Hall of Famer in Nonito Donaire. So there's some perspective on how that fight went down. I hope they fight again. We'll get to that in a second. Who is Michael Dasmarinas? He's 2 inches taller than Naoya Inoue. He's a southpaw. Like I said, knucklehead boxing. The guy's going to come in there and look to win. He's not going to go, just getting a paycheck. To say he likes to go to the body is a massive understatement. Over his last 2 fights, 57% of his landed punches were body shots. The copy box average for body shots is 29%. This guy goes in there and just targets those ribs. So I expect him to go in there, fight like a southpaw, use angles, be tricky, go to the body, try to go the distance with Inoue, a guy that, like I just said, wants to go for the knockout. What's next for Naoya Inoue? A move to 122 seems inevitable, but there's still work to be done at 118. It's a hot division right now. Rigondeaux is fighting Casemiro for Casemiro's belt. Donaire, like I just said, has the WBC belt. Maybe they can work out a deal, Inoue and Donaire, a rematch ESPN pay-per-view if you have to do it. Fans will tune in for that. There's a lot of business to be made at 118 before Inoue moves up to 122. Maybe he wants to be undisputed there. That would be great. But they got to keep this guy active. Top Rank has a star on their hands, a pound for pound, an all-time great. Let's get the movement going. Let's get Inoue all over, ESPN. Let's go over to Jermall Charlo, Juan Macias Montiel. This is over on Showtime, main event. Charlo's WBC middleweight crown or title on the line. Now, Charlo's numbers don't jump out at you if you look at just on paper. But his last performance, which I thought was his best, over Sergey Derevchenko, told me a lot about who Charlo is and what he's going to continue to be in the second half of his career, because he is over 30 years old. Derevchenko fought him tough. Derevchenko landed the most punches ever on Charlo. He threw the most punches. He landed the most in one round. 27 landed on Charlo. He gave him tough rounds, Derevchenko. But you can also make the case that Charlo handled Derevchenko better than Triple G did and Jacobs did. But to play devil's advocate, Triple G took a lot out of Derevchenko. The guy's been through a lot of wars. But I'm not trying to take anything away from Charlo's performance that night, which was also around Halloween in 2020. Charlo, when the going got tough, he shined. His jab was precise. His power punching was precise. Doesn't go to the body. That's just not who he is. Why go to the body when you're having so much success up top? But which Charlo will show up against Juan Macias Montiel? It's a gross mismatch. It's one of the fights on the Showtime rollout that I thought, was not too pumped for. It is what it is. Charlo, it's tough for him to get opponents at this time in his career. He should be getting, the Andrades of the world, the Triple G. Triple G wants no part of Charlo. I think that's been made clear. But, which Charlo are we going to get? The guy that went the distance with Kharbov, the guy that went the distance with Brandon Adams? Although Adams, is coming on of late, but, or Are we going to get the Charlo that was going in there taking heads off, you know, knocking out Julian Williams, knocking out Hugo Centeno, knocking out Patrick Hyland? I want to see that Charlo show up on Saturday night. What's next for him? Like I said, Triple G doesn't want any part of him. You know, the fight with Andrade doesn't seem like that's going to come into fruition as much as Chris Mannix wants it to happen. A move up to 168 seems like the most logical thing for Jermall Charlo, who is on the north side of 30 and can see his career starting to, you know, it's moving on. It's moving up his career. He sees his brother, Jermell, fighting for legacy, going for undisputed at 154 against Castaño. I think a clash at 168 with Benavidez would be box office. He can make a ton of money there, and then he can move up, and he can he's going to move up at 168. Then he can potentially fight Canelo. Everyone wants to see Charlo versus Canelo. It's the fight that I want to see the most out of all the opponents out there for Canelo. I want to see him fight Jermall Charlo. But this fight can reach its peak if Charlo goes up to 168 and fights Benavidez. The winner gets Canelo. Huge pay-per-view at the end of 2021, maybe 2022. Even if he fights a top 10 guy at 168 before Canelo, still, I take that. But I think Charlo, his time at 160 is done. He has nothing more to prove. Go up to 168, get that Canelo fight. Give us entertainment. Jaime Munguia is fighting over on the DAZN pay-per-view. That is a DAZN 3:30 Eastern time main event. So you can watch Munguia at 3:30 Eastern and then go on to your however you're going to watch the other fights you know, that night. But Munguia, we know what he is at this point. He's an offensive fighter, offensive dynamo. You know, 23 punches landed around, close to 70 thrown. Defense is getting better. That's been the knock on Munguia, is that his defense, he's not a good defensive fighter. Over his last five fights, his opponents are only landing 26% of their punches. So he's improving. He's an improving fighter. He's a young fighter, but he's an entertaining fighter. I think there's a lot to be said about entertaining fans today. Just, heck, look, this week, there's four or five different cards. How are you getting fans' attention? By being an entertaining fighter. It doesn't mean that you have to go in there and brawl. You know, I'm never a big advocate for that. You know, we're not going to the hospital with you after the fight. We're not the ones that have to live potentially with CTE and all that stuff. But go for it. Throw 23 punches around. Be a defensive fighter. Work on your defensive skills to go along with your offensive stuff, which is what Jaime Munguia has. Camille Sheremeta, you know the name. He fought Triple G last. A decent guy. I think he'll give Munguia some rounds. It was supposed to be Selecki. That fight did not happen, obviously. So Sheremeta versus Munguia. Maybe Munguia gets Andrade at 160. Maybe he goes up to 168. Munguia wants Triple G. I mean, they were supposed to fight a few years ago. Remember that? But Vannes Martirosyan stepped in instead. You know, I think Munguia is still learning. I think that he's still young. He's getting better. And he's a guy worth fighting, worth watching, because he's entertaining. And you know it's going to be a fun, fun fight. All right, some fights under the radar before we say goodbye. Adam Lopez versus Isaac Dogbe at lightweight. Like that matchup. That's a crossroads fight. Over on the DAZN undercard, Beck the Bully, the fast-rising 168-pounder who was supposed to fight Kovalev in his last fight before Kovalev popped for PEDs, is fighting Gabe Rosado. I thought Rosado beat Jacobs in his last fight. I want to watch that one. I don't think it's going the distance. Isaac Cruz, Francisco Vargas. Yes, that Francisco Vargas, who fought the lower weights, is moving all the way up to lightweight to face Isaac Cruz, who is a force at 135, who's knocking on the door at the champs at 135, which is Teofimo Lopez. Probably not going to get that fight. So that's the weekend of fights. I need a drink of water because I have never talked this much in my life. Usually I have guests on the show, but I wanted to break down all these fights for you. It is a great time to be a fight fan. There's fights around the clock. Heavyweights coming this summer. Pacquiao coming this summer. Canelo coming in the fall. Teofimo Lopez is, of course, going to be fighting in the end of the summer now. God willing, he you know, recovers from COVID. So it's a great time to be a boxing fan. Don't let anyone tell you that it's not, because it is.